Good morning. So what are you here for? Hopefully not just coffee and donuts. What are you here for? The talk title today is called The Spiritual Experience, and I want to set that up with a little story. Let's pretend that there was an intentional community. Everybody knows what an intentional community is. This is where like-minded people gather, and let's say in this intentional community, there is a leader, a guru. Let's even say that they're a vegan. So they're in New Jersey. And everybody is very mindful. So they practice mindful eating. They gather around. They do satsang, and they do chanting, and they do meditation, and they're very much into their holistic spiritual practice. And everybody seems to be in harmony with one another, except for Sam. So Sam is the kind of person that whenever there is a class, his arm is always up, and he's always vying for attention, and he's always asking questions that are completely irrelevant to what the guru is sharing. Of course, none of you do that, right? It's, again, we said it's vegan, and people swear that they can smell bacon being fried in Sam's room. When they go on Buddhist walks, you know, they do the heel-toe mindfulness walk. Sam sort of shuffles like he's wearing house slippers that was tap shoes, but anyway, so he's always drawing attention to himself. And the community is starting to get upset because the guru doesn't seem to be doing anything about Sam. And you know, people start talking and they go, I wonder why he's not calling him out. I wonder why he hasn't said anything, because it's really disruptive. And one day, the guru decides that he needs to travel onto the island of Manhattan to do some shopping. And so while he is away, everyone in the community sees this as an opportunity. And they all go and they gather around Sam. And they say to Sam, you don't belong here. And Sam is taken aback. I mean, he really felt like he was getting it. You know, he really felt like he was growing. And he saw the fervency by which they were surrounding and telling him this. And he said, well, they must be right. And they said, yes, you don't belong here. We think that it would be better for everyone, including you, that you pack your bags and leave. And so Sam walked back to his room, and he gathered his belongings and his bacon fryer, and he put it in his pack. And he started to walk down the road towards the bus. And simultaneously, the guru came back. And let's say the guru was driving an electric Prius. And the moment that he opened the door, the moment that the guru's foot hit the ground, he could feel something had shifted. And he said, where's Sam? There was a change in the force. Where is Sam? And everyone very proudly walked up to the guru and they said, well, we took care of it for you. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, we took care of it for you. We had Sam leave. And he goes, you did what? We had Sam leave. And he goes, where is Sam? And they said, he's walking down. He's at the bus stop. And the guru takes off, and he runs down the road, and he gets to Sam just as he was getting onto the bus, and he grabs Sam's hand, and he pulls him down, and he says, you can't leave. And Sam said, I'm confused because everyone said that I didn't fit in. And he goes, no, you don't understand. We need you. Without you, there would be no spiritual growth and experience. And when I think of that story, I think about how many times we try to get rid of our Sam. Our Sam, and you know, I am kind of from the South. And so we don't say ashram, we say ashram. So when we try to get rid of our Sams and our ashrams, who is your Sam? What is it that you're trying to get rid of? What is it that you're trying to make go away? What is it that you wish would walk down the road and get on the bus and leave? Because you see, it is that thing. It is that thing that is the genesis or the primordial seed of our spiritual experience. Without that, we have no growth. Without that, we become complacent and conformist. Without that gift that the universe is bringing to us, then we forget what our place is in the world. And most importantly, we lose our sense of practice. And so I know that you know what spiritual practice is. And I know that people have often said, we have to cultivate that and we have to do that. But that practice in our spirituality is the thing that moves us from being interested in this to being invested in this. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning, is the spiritual experience and the reason why you and I are here. I know you've heard this before, but I'm going to repeat it again. Your solution to the thing that you pray for already exists. The thing that you pine away for in your imagination, the thing that you long for, that which is resting inside of your soul that will not go away, whether you and I have moved those things to the back burner or not, they're still there. Because those things, those divine ideas, those urges would not have cultivated and appeared within our consciousness if unilaterally, at the same time, the answer to that thing wasn't also available to us. Let me repeat that. The desire that is in your heart comes with its own ways and means. And so the spiritual experience for us is to find out whether or not all this that we're doing in this skin suit, in this adventure called the human experience, whether or not we will ever migrate from simply being interested in it or becoming invested in it. And what I know about the investment part is that's the part where you and I are in relationship with our Sams all the time. By the way, if your name is Sam, I already apologize. But you see how vital that is. That every single thing is an opportunity in order to create the investment of this thing called a spiritual experience. The spiritual experience is simply understanding and knowing who and what you are and why you are here. And with all of the years of doing this and all of the students that I teach and all of the messages given, the thing that keeps coming back over and over again is how? How do I do this? How do I cultivate this practice? How do I find practical application that is suited for me? And my whole intention has begun to morph and change around this idea of practical application. Because I heard once that people don't want to hear a sermon, they want to see a sermon. And so for me, that means that not only do I find ways to offer practical application, that at some point I have to be willing to create that same practice within myself. I have to live out loud. And one of the things that I have become truly enamored with is playing around with the subject of time. So how many of you have heard before that there is no such thing as time? It's a wonderful thing, but do you really know what that means? When we think of there is no past and there is no future, that this experience that we're having is unilaterally taking place with all of the other experiences multidimensionally within our lives, when we begin to think of it that way, then this statement is not an accurate statement. What's done is done. How many of you have ever found yourself saying that? What's done is done. There's nothing I can do about it. It's already happened. I can't go back and I can't fix that. I've begun to entertain the idea that that is not an accurate statement, because we are vessels of imagination. Imagination is timeless. It is formless. It has no boundaries whatsoever. And when I began to study the writings of Neville Goddard, maybe some of you know who Neville Goddard is, he said this word in a couple of chapters in all of the anthologies of his work, and the word was revisioning. And he said, revisioning is the practical application of going to something that happened in your past and changing the circumstances. And I became fascinated by that. He gave a few case studies, and so as I looked at those case studies, I became even more enamored with the idea that most of us are walking around with historical wounds. Those historical wounds have established themes inside of us, like I'm not good enough, or there's never enough, or the world is unfair. We walk around with these themes subconsciously. And regardless of whatever kind of spiritual experience that we're trying to cultivate and have, those themes are overriding our experience, meaning that they are our SAMs, and we have not made peace with them. So I began to look at this religiously because I was fascinated by this idea, and I thought, you know, David, what are your themes? What are the things that you walk around with? One of my themes that I learned early on came from when I was 7 years old. My father passed away when I was seven, and I was the last of a tribe of children. And this was back in the day of the rotary phone. I know I looked really young, but no, that was then. And so there wasn't enough rooms to go around in this little flat-top house where I was raised in Beaumont, Texas. So when the VA hospital called to inform my mother that my dad had passed away, I was there. I heard it. And she took the information. She hung up the phone. She picked the phone back up again, and she called my aunt, and she told her what had happened to my father. And then she said this: "What am I supposed to do with a seven-year-old boy?" And I heard that. And in my seven-year-old mind, I wasn't quite sure what to do with that information, but subconsciously, I took that. And the theme that began to be cultivated from that experience was that I was in the way. So I think some of us, maybe a lot of us in this room, might have a similar theme about when I show up, I'm a fraud, so I'm going to have to work harder than everybody else in the room. Or when I show up, I'm going to have to put my best foot forward, and I wonder what's going to happen when I have to bring the other foot, you know, the one that's not doesn't have the pedicure and the wart and the hair on it, and they begin to see who I am. We carry around these themes that, without realizing, get in the way of our spiritual experience. Because what are we wanting to do? We're wanting them to go away, and we haven't healed them or brought them into our consciousness in a holistic way. So I kept thinking about that particular experience and about that phone call and how over the years that has been a real teaching tool for me. Because I ultimately realized that what my mother said had nothing to do with me. It really didn't. This was a woman who was now widowed with all these children, who was very upset, very frightened. But I, in my seven-year-old body, took it to have everything to do with me, which is the way most of us perceive those experiences. It is from our realm, our vision, our perception. And so I wanted to go back and I wanted to revision that moment. And I began to set up some ground rules, because Neville Goddard had not set up ground rules in this. And this is becoming a part of my next book. And so I wanted to be able to establish these rules to go out and begin to collect case studies. So I said, I got to start with me. I got to do my practical application. So I went back to that night, in the middle of the night when the phone rang. And there I was. And I heard my mother say that again. And the first ground rule is that whatever memory comes up for you, number one, you have to be willing to find value in the event. You have to be willing to find value in the event. It can't be a SAM. You can't wish that it would go away or that it had never happened, because the key thing about who you are present day is that every single thing that has transpired in our life has brought you and I to where we are right now, sitting in this chair. I don't know if you were aware of that or not, but even the most egregious acts, even the most heinous things, when we talk about and share our stories, our abuses, our failures, when we share all of those things, if you're willing to see value in that, then we have something to work with. It makes the revisioning valid, because those things propelled us to make choices and to move forward, and so here we are. And so we're willing, number one, to see value in that. Number two, and this is the one that all of my people get stuck on. Number two is, you cannot change the free will of another individual. So that means that in the event, I can't go back and wish that they hadn't died. I can't go back and wish that they hadn't left. I cannot go back and wish that that particular thing that they did to me didn't take place. But what I can do is revision my response to that particular event. And so I'll tell you the next step later, but as I looked at that and I thought, well, I cannot not make my mother say that. What I can do is I can sit up in that bed, that little cot that I was in, and I can have a completely different paradigm and acceptance. I can listen to her and I go, my God, she must be so afraid. And I can get up out of that bed. And so in my revisionings as I've worked with this, I go over and there are multitudes of scenarios that I've come up with. One of them is I just go while she's talking on the phone with my aunt and I put my arms around her. And I say, it's going to be okay. And suddenly, the event is not about me anymore. Suddenly, the event is about me giving her comfort. Do you see how that establishes a completely different set of themes? As that seven-year-old, then I become someone who has the sense to realize when people are in pain and to offer comfort to them and to not be so egocentric and make it about me. And so as I began to do this work and walk around, I was in Kansas City, actually, at Unity Village. I gave a conference this assignment. I said, when you go home tonight, when I want you to revision something, I want you to go with the very first thing that comes up for you, the very first story. And I said, here's why I want you to commit to that, because there's something there for you. Otherwise, your subjective, your subconscious mind would not have popped that into your awareness. I said, commit to that. That's step number three. Commit to the one that comes up for you. So, you know, we have no control of whether or not people are going to do the exercise, but the next morning I gathered around and I said, so, how many of you actually participated in this? And they all raised their hand. And I knew some of them were lying, but they all raised their hand. And I said, who is willing to share the memory that came up for you? And a very prominent Unity minister raised her hand. And she said, you know, the first memory that came up for me was when I was about 8 years old. She said, my mother had me when she was a teenager, and then she had my younger sister. So that by the time my mother was in her late 20s, we were 7 or 8 years old, and she was like any other normal 20-something woman. She wanted to go out. She wanted to have fun. So the routine was that on weekends when she wanted to go out and have fun, she would put my sister and I in bed, she pulled the covers over, and she would leave. And my bed was right by the window, and I would watch, and I would see her get in her car, and I would pull out, and I don't know what it was that compelled me to do this, but I would sit up and wait until she got home. And sometimes she didn't get home until 2, 3 in the morning. And so most of those weekends when I was a girl would be sitting and waiting for my mother to come home. And I said, how did that make you feel? She said, it made me feel scared and fearful because I was overly concerned about her well-being. And I said, and did you try to revision that? And she said, yes. I said, tell me. And she said, well, there she was, tucking us in, because I could smell the fabric softener and the pajamas and the sheets, and she's pulling us and she's kissing us on the forehead. I sit back up, I see her pull out of the driveway, and then I put my head down and I went to sleep. And everybody laughed because it was so simple. And she said, yeah, I just went to sleep. I said, that's perfect. And how did that make you feel? She said it was like this burden or this relief of all this over-responsibilizing. And I said, and do you find over-responsibility to be a theme that is currently in your life today? And she said, absolutely. She goes, it makes my ministry so difficult because I'm always second-guessing everybody. I'm always micromanaging. I know none of us do that in here, so we can all judge her, okay? So for the moment. But you start to see then the power of the way in which past behavior affects present-day circumstances. And so when I sit with you and I ask you and we explore a little bit about what is your theme, because themes are cultivated. And those themes are cultivated by these situations where we felt separate from, where we did not know or understand what the spiritual experience was about. And this, to me, then, is the fascinating part, because when we receive all of this information, what do we do with it? The majority of us live within the realm of simply being interested in the message. But oh, the person who is ready to bridge from being simply interested in your life to being invested in the restoration and the wholeness of who and what we are. So let me remind you of who you are. You are a vessel or an instrument of the divine. What does that mean? That means that you and I, none of us here are accidents. That our soul's intentions picked you purposefully for the gifts and the talents and the influence and the circle of the people that you would become involved with, picked you particularly to be that vessel, to be that instrument, to be that mouthpiece of truth. And to the degree, my three favorite words on the planet, to the degree that you and I own that, from simply being interested to being invested in that, is the degree in which we begin to soar. Because you see, our consciousness, our awareness, will only bring to us through our cooperation with it. In other words, I cannot be simply interested in my prosperity. I have to be invested in my prosperity for me to have the experience of prosperity. I can't simply talk about it and recite affirmations. I have to understand, and I have to go back to the idea that who I am is a vessel of that which is the all. What does that mean? What does the all mean? Neville Goddard, one of that great teacher that I absolutely love, he said, "Let me remind you that everything has already been created." And people go, "What? Everything has already been created." What does that mean? That means, again, that the desire that is in my heart, that is in your heart, the manifestation of that thing is already in full form. When I was walking the Camino de Santiago back in Spain when I turned 50 years old. In fact, my friend Mark is here that walked it with me. I remember being on the trail, and I remember that first day being so anxious about the bed at the end of the day, because it was a new experience for me. And I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know where we were going to sleep, and I was really slow that day. And I was in full judgment. And something happened when I was crossing over the Pyrenees, because I caught myself being anxious about what was going to happen at the end of the day. And these three words came to me: solution already exists. Solution already exists, meaning the bed at the end of the day will be there. Why don't you just be present now? That's the spiritual experience. Why don't you understand then that in the realm of the all, that everything you need will be brought to you specifically and exactly as you need it, if you have moved from being interested in that concept to being invested in that concept to creating the expectation of that. And so I let it go that what was going to be needed or wanted would show up, and sure enough, it was. And I start to realize then that that's the call of something more for you and I. To stop living in this energy of worry of how is this going to happen? How do I have to micromanage things about what my subconscious themes are doing to create sabotage inside of myself? When I become so invested in the fact that I am a vessel for the all, and it wants to express through me to the degree of my cooperation, then guess what my spiritual experience is going to be all about. How far can I take this? How far can I take this? How many Sams can I say, come on? Come on, Sam. Come on, irritation. Come on, the thing of the fear. Come on, that which has pushed me and shadowed me because of some unconscious theme that has kept me apart from the dream that I'm wanting to realize. How many of those things, then, are getting in the way of you and I actually fulfilling the divine purpose of why we're here? And your story as to why you can't do that, I'm sorry, but that story is only as valid as you make it. Because you see, the spiritual experience is true for all. The practical application part of that is available to all. It's whether or not, A, we're conscious of it and recognize it and take advantage of it, and B, whether we're simply interested in that or we become invested in that. And so that's my call to you today. You know, we always enter into this wind-up of this season as we gear for another year. And it's as if we give ourselves extra permission at this time of the year to take a pause, to take a breath and say, okay, reset, redo. I'm going to reset, I'm going to redo. And I go, why didn't we do that in August or in March? Because you see, that same reset opportunity, that spiritual experience, is available to us 24/7. And the Sams are there every single day, aren't they? And so that's my call to you. I'm hungry for people. I'm hungry for people who have moved, who have migrated from simply being interested to becoming so invested in this that then we walk around with this heightened sense of expectation that all things are working together for good to them who know and understand and love. It says Lord in Scripture, but that is law. To them who love the law of cause and effect, that whatever I choose within the realm of my cause becomes my effect, that those who love that so much that they become invested as walking, breathing examples of conscious law every single day. Guess what would happen? If you made an investment within yourself right today, you said, all right, I'm tired of just sort of dancing on the edge. I want to immerse myself in the infinite potentiality that is inside of me. I want to do that. I want to find out what the practical application is for me. I want to begin to revision the things from my past so that I'm not walking around with this wounded story. It's old, it's tired, it's stale. If you did that between now and 1 year from now, Ernest Holmes, the great metaphysician, said, if you and I did that, you would not recognize yourself in 1 year. And that's not because of what somebody else did for you. It's because you and I then became invested in our own well-being and our own true nature. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes for a moment and just take a deep breath. I have a hunch that there are some of you out there this morning that are willing to maybe take this spiritual experience just one degree further. That one degree further is matched from sincerity to sincerity to sincerity by the universe. For every single day that we say yes to the investment of ourselves, the universe says yes back. To every 5-minute increment that we allow ourselves the luxury to go back and to see something from our past, and to revision that thing in a more productive, a more holistic, a more loving manner. The universe says yes and brings us current day experiences to match the energy of that. And so for those of you this morning who might be ready, let's do a little mental ceremony And in your mind right now, I just want you to see looking at yourself in the mirror. And I want you to say to that divine reflection, I see you. And I do not have to wait till 2015 ends in order for me to resolve within myself the things that are not working. In fact, I choose right now in this moment. And in my choosing and in the energy of allowing, I don't need to know how. That's the universe's business. I just need to be invested in the process. And so I say yes to that investment. I cough that stuff up and I say yes, yes to that investment. I cough up all of that stuff from the past. And I clear it out, and oh my God, can I breathe now? And so just breathe with me. Breathe in a new commitment. The only investment that matters is the investment in yourself. May this day be the dawning of a completely new spiritual experience. So it is. Thank you.
We are so blessed. Let's take the next few moments and breathe in the calm and the peace of this sacred place. Just be still and let David's inspiring words sink into your heart and feel yourself embrace the special message that is yours alone today. Settle back in your chair and feel it supporting you. If you sense any tension in your body, just release it now and completely relax. Feel your feet connecting with the floor and become fully present in this divine moment where infinite possibilities surround us. As we stand at the start of another holiday season together with all its blessings and joys, this year, let's choose to be shining examples of God and good in all we do. I can decide today that no matter what comes up, what complication gets tossed into my careful holiday plan, I will focus on the faith that will carry me through any challenge. Let's choose to walk by faith and not by sight. And know we'll be led to the perfect outcome. Whatever the situation, I am filled with faith that I can practice forgiveness and joyfully release any judgment. Spirit is inspiring me now to show my love in special new ways this holiday season, not just with goods, but in good, in moments of compassion, in moments of prayer, in moments of quiet listening to another who needs my support. And as I set this loving intention every day, I see myself energized and well organized, knowing that there is more than enough time to do what is mine to do. I can delegate confidently, trusting that all is already well and perfectly completed. Let this infusion of time and energy include the blessing of a few moments of stillness every day. When we feel any stress building up inside us, soothe our racing hearts with waves of peace and calm. lead us to look outside for just a moment and see a cardinal on a bare tree branch, or high clouds piercing the sun, and remind us that Spirit is in us and all around us, and we have nothing to fear. Help me to embrace all sounds of the season with new ears this year, lightening my heart to sing along and thrill again to the sound of a mighty organ or a preschooler singing jingle bells. Soften my heart when others grow shrill, and bless me as I join in prayers for those I see suffering in this season of love and rebirth. Filled with gratitude, let us focus on faith this week, confident and trusting that we are always divinely guided with no need for concern. I bless and release my holiday expectations to Spirit, knowing that there is more joy in store than I could possibly imagine. And as we move into a moment of silence together, call your heart in mind and focus on that shining light of God that you are, and see it magnified and multiplied and radiating into our city and our world. What a blessing it is to come around again to this time of year and to that place in our hearts where our faith is stirred and revitalized by the rebirth of the Christ Spirit within. And as we return our consciousness to symphony space and again become aware of those around us, let's take one more moment to breathe in the love and light of this season and all the goodness that is ours to embrace. And so it is. Amen.